thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
My plan.
Here's John Williams.
We're going to do the best we can. 109, this is WGN Radio. John Williams live in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. And good Lord, we've got things to listen to and talk about, and that will include you doing the listening and also getting a chance to call in and say, hey, John, here's why I think James Comey was fired. By the way, Kim, are we able to listen in?
We are. Let's go to Sarah Sanders, who's giving the White House press briefing today.
The president will be meeting with Acting Director McCabe later today to discuss that very thing, the morale at the FBI, as well as make an offer to go directly to the FBI if he feels that that's necessary and appropriate, and we'll certainly provide further information on that meeting for you guys.
The organization that represents FBI agents is asking for a voice in the selection process of Mr. Comey's successor. Is that something the president
I haven't had that conversation.
Okay, well, it's just
but
kind
I
of interesting.
At this point,
we'll continue to monitor that. It's been going on, but what
been
a day.
At it for a while now.
I wanted Sean Spicer to do the show today.
I know, and isn't it ironic that Melissa McCarthy's on Saturday Night Live hosting and no Spicer for this?
Where's Sean Spicer's show? That's our favorite TV show, the Sean Spicer Show. And how bizarre was it last night? That when they said there would be no further comment from the White House about the James Comey dismissal, the press just hung around and hung around. And I don't know if they meant this literally or figuratively, but the Tribune reported, and others did as well, that Spicer and his staff locked themselves in their office. Locked. I don't know. But they waited. And so then they said, okay, we're going to break. We're going to bolt out of here. We can't sleep here tonight, and the press won't go away. So they just sort of made a beeline for the parking lot. But by this time, Donald Trump had been watching the coverage on TV. And he was so disappointed that nobody was defending his position on the cable shows, perhaps in part because he hadn't communicated to his staff and he didn't want them out there anyway. But he was so disappointed that nobody was defending him that he now said to Kellyanne Conway and Sean Spicer and Ms. Huckabee here, they said, okay, you guys go out there and you defend us. So then they went out to defend them. But it wasn't the way you normally do these sorts of things. That is, maybe in the White House press briefing room or at some other place where you would have a press conference. They just went out there. And so there's Sean Spicer. And I think he was going to try and electronically send some sort of message, but for some reason that wasn't working. They should have contacted Anthony Weiner. I believe that's where all important documents go. But anyway, so Spicer is now standing somewhere outside the White House along a hedgerow, quote unquote, in the dark. In fact, he asked that the TV lights be turned off. And then he had a sort of spontaneous ad hoc press conference there with the core that had settled around him. The strangest times. Bob Walsh is on a phone line. He's a former FBI special agent. And he joins us now on WGN Radio. Hi, Bob. It's John Williams. Welcome to our show.
Hi, John. How you doing?
I'm doing real well. Tell me a little bit about what you did for the FBI.
Well, when I had a 27-year career, and when I retired, I was the head of the office in San Francisco. And before that, I headed the office in San Diego, and I spent a lot of years in Chicago. I was the assistant agent in charge in Chicago.
What do you make?
Currently, I'm the chairman of the former FBI agents in Chicago, and I had been chairman of the FBI Foundation nationwide.
So a career in service to the FBI. What did you make?
I did. I spent a lot of years in the FBI.
What did you make of James Comey as the head of the FBI?
You know, I liked Jim Comey. I think he was refreshing. I think from the discussions I had with agents, they liked him. He got involved. He was a quick study. He was as smart as can be. I can recall he would get up and give an hour talk without looking at a single note. And he just never missed a beat. And I think he was good for the FBI.
Why do you think he was dismissed? Why do you think he was fired?
Well, of course, I'm sure the reason they'll give is that it was too political. He got just too involved and controversial. My guess is that he wasn't part of the administration. He was left over from the other administration. And for whatever reason, and I don't know the reason, for whatever reason, they decided that it wasn't worth it to keep him.
Well, the worst case scenario is that he was fired because he was about to either reveal damaging goods to the administration or that the ongoing investigation was going to do that. And Donald Trump doesn't want somebody who's kind of hawkish on this thing to be working it. So they just dismiss James Comey. And then Donald Trump will get to appoint his own head of the FBI. And he's got cover with Jeff Sessions. Well, sort of not. But you understand my point? What do you think of that scenario?
You know, I don't know. The investigation, whatever they have going, and I certainly don't know what's going on, but whatever they have going is going to keep going. The agents, FBI agents working the cases, and it's just not agents. It's agents and there's supervisors and there's agents in charge and they got legal counsel. They got everybody working these cases, and they're not going to drop it. You know, if you look at the agents themselves are not political. If you look at Chicago, you know, they investigated and convicted a Democratic governor, and then they had previously convicted a Republican governor. In the city of Chicago, politics, whoever seems to come up on the radar is investigated and really doesn't have anything to do with politics.
It would be unlikely in your experience, in your decades in the FBI, if there is a popular or unpopular Democrat or Republican president, that wouldn't trickle down to the enthusiasm with which the agents do their job?
I don't think so. I mean, they may have their personal opinions, but as far as doing the job, you know, the laws are written in a certain way and they follow the guidelines that they have. And, the FBI is a very controlling organization also. Everything is done. Everything is put on paper. There are file reviews every 60 or 90 days that, just for the routine agents, their cases will be reviewed. And agents are motivated by results. If they're looking at a violation, they want to develop the elements of that violation. They want to prove it. They want to get their case indicted. And once it's indicted, they want to do everything they can to make sure that the proper evidence is put into court and the case ends up in a conviction. So I don't think agents in the field doesn't make any difference. I mean, we've had, allegations against Catholic priests and Catholic agents or Catholic police officers can work those cases. It doesn't matter. It's the violation that they look at and not the politics.
Yeah. I got a couple of callers with questions and comments. You want to take a couple of these with me, Bob Walsh?
I'll give it a try.
Are you sitting in a bird sanctuary? Where are you, sir?
I'm out on my patio here.
I want to
go back inside.
I want to be you someday. So you're sitting on your patio in California, right? And the birds are chirping and the sun is...
This is Naperville.
I had you in California for some reason. All right, hold the line for just a second, and we'll pick up some phone calls. Naperville, San Diego, whatever. My number is 312-981-7200. My question to him and to you is, why do you think that James Comey was fired? The president and the staff are on TV right now saying that they are surprised at the pushback and that how is it that anybody is shocked that James Comey was fired? Of course he should be fired. Bob Walsh is on the phone line, a former FBI special agent. He worked in California. He's also worked in the Chicago office. He's in Naperville right now where the birds were chirping. Let's see if Bob is still there. Hey, Bob, are you still there?
I'm here.
Now it sounds like Naperville, not San Diego.
That's right.
I got a couple questions and comments from some of our listeners. Let's just take them as they come. We'll start with Mitch. You're on WGN. Hi, Mitch. You're on the air.
Well, thank you so much, John. My only thought on this whole thing is that it kind of looks like or smacks of being a Nixonian-type Watergate cover-up.
Yeah, it's a little bit like the Saturday Night Massacre. That's the thing that people are mostly comparing it to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Nixon fired, I think his name was Cox, if I'm not mistaken, and... it all came back to haunt him later on. I don't see how this could be a cover-up. At least that's what it looks like to me.
Thanks for the phone call. And whatever it is, how does the president not appreciate that? How does he not think that we won't think that, even if it's not true, even if there's no cover-up, even if, in fact, Comey three times told the president that he's not under investigation, which, by the way, is a wrinkle we haven't gotten into yet. But how does he not think that we won't talk along these lines? And if we are going to, then how is it that he didn't tell Kellyanne Conway and Sean Spicer, hey, guys, here's the play. Here's what we're going to say because this is the truth, and let's go with this unified message. It's not conniving. It's just getting your ducks in a row. How did that not happen? Don't ask me. You have anything to say about that, Bob?
Well, I agree with you. I think it the way it came down really is problematic. Jim Comey had a good career in the Department of Justice and certainly in the FBI, and he deserved better treatment than to hear that he's being fired while he's out in Los Angeles, ready to give a speech to FBI agents during an award ceremony out there. So it doesn't matter what the reason was, it never should have happened the way it did.
They walk, Trump's bodyguard with a manila envelope walks to the FBI office in Washington, D.C., and drops his letter of termination in his inbox, then gets back in his car and drives away. That's how they did it. And then when it is made public, you're right, Comey is giving a presentation to the FBI in California. CNN's on, and they go, isn't that funny? Ha, ha, ha. It's a joke. Look, Trump just fired you. And then they realize, oh, my gosh, it's not a joke. He gets back on the plane, flies home.
Yeah. Yeah. That's unconscionable that they would do it that way. You know, in the Bureau, of course, they fire agents every once in a while for misconduct, but they always give them, you know, their day in court. You know, they bring them in, they interview them, they get their side, they explain everything to them, and then if they need to, they'll terminate them.
Well, but even if it's fait accompli, even if they're just, there will be no conversation, but you owe the man at least a face-to-face sit down and let him prepare for it. Get him out of that embarrassing situation.
Exactly. And, you know, Comey had a reputation, from what I hear from my friends that are still in the FBI, he had a reputation that he would inform all of the FBI employees on any major situation or decision that he had to make. And I'm sure he would have liked the opportunity to make his case or at least say goodbye to his colleagues.
All right, we got more calls. Steve, you're on WGN. What did you want to say, Steve? You're on the air.
Hey, John. You know, I just have a quick observation. You know, in the second paragraph, it stated that President Trump said, oh, you know, call me, thank you for telling me three times I was under investigation. One, I guess I look at it like this, is that if the president had asked Comey this three times, that meant that he knew something was going on, or he knew that he was going to be in trouble for something, and he was wondering if it came down yet. On the other hand, if Comey just freely offered this information, then to me that would mean that it was a criminal case that could be brought against James Comey. In that circumstance, wouldn't there be immunity possibly offered in exchange for further testimony among all subjects of Russia, campaign involvement, blah, 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 blah?
Here's what I know, and it may be more than Bob knows on the phone line right now, but they just asked at this White House press briefing today about that. And the official word was that they don't have anything else to say about the three times that Comey allegedly told Donald Trump he's not under investigation. When Anderson Cooper brought that up with Kellyanne Conway last night on TV, they got into an argument. It wasn't Anderson Cooper. It was Cuomo brought it up with, I believe, Kellyanne Conway. And he was asserting that Trump asked, and she said, you don't have any proof of that. When they read this same paragraph, it doesn't say Trump asked. It simply says, you told me on three separate occasions, you informed me that I'm not under investigation. So then why would Comey, without a prompt, do that? Under what circumstances did that happen? Why would Comey do that? And the White House is mum on that so far today. We don't know how that went down.
But if he did do that, isn't that cause for some type of prosecution? Because wouldn't that be against protocol and against the law for the FBI agent to speak of any ongoing investigation, whether true or not?
What about that, Bob? What do you think about that?
Oftentimes, the prosecutor or an agent will tell somebody they're not under investigation. It's not like they're releasing any information. They're just saying, okay, you're not. That doesn't mean there was an investigation. That means he's not the target of the investigation.
Well, that's surprising to me, too, though. I mean, let's take the president at face value here. Are you a little surprised, Bob, that the president is not an object of an investigation into Russian meddling in the election?
You know, I don't know what the allegations were. They would have gotten some allegations, some information would have been put together either through the electronic, reviewing electronic surveillance, or maybe they have a cooperating witness or informant, something predicated the case. And it may or may not involve the president. It may, you know, chances are it does certainly involve some of his colleagues or people on his staff or supporters. I don't know. I just don't know enough about it. I don't think anyone outside the FBI really knows enough about what that case is.
No, but hold on. But you know a little bit about protocol, so I'm just going to read this sentence to you one more time. The president said in his letter, "While I greatly appreciate you informing me on three separate occasions that I am not under investigation, I nevertheless confer with the judgment of the Department of Justice that you are not able to effectively lead the Bureau." So this is Trump telling the world that on three separate occasions, Comey told Trump that. And you're telling me, I just want to be clear about this, I'm not doubting you, but you're telling me that that does not strike you as unusual, that if you're not under investigation, they would tell you you're not under investigation. That
could happen. Sometimes they do. You know, I think it is unusual that sentence is in the letter. I think it's very surprising that he would put that in the letter. But as far as telling somebody they're not under investigation, that happens. You know, that's not unusual. It's not a violation. You know, I mean, look at you. You see it on TV all the time. They say, "Well, am I under investigation?" No, you're not. We're looking.
Oh, we see stuff
on somebody else.
Wait a minute. I see stuff on TV all the time, but it ain't true. You worked in the FBI. You were in the Bureau for what, 4 decades, and you're telling me that on occasion this will happen. So the remarkable thing is more that the president revealed that rather than
exactly.
That may have happened. All right. Yeah. Hey, Bob, listen, I'm out of time, but let's say you and I touch bases again. I appreciate your thoughts and expertise.
Well, thank you very much. You have a good day.
Bob Walsh, thanks for joining us today on WGN, former FBI agent in sunny Naperville. 138. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. Steve, do you have a short answer to why do you think President Trump fired James Comey?
Well, I think there's more to it than what they're saying. Let me just put it that way.
Yeah. I think that's wise and true. And, you know, maybe it's both. You know, maybe it's both. Maybe it is that they were dismayed by his handling of the email investigation, and maybe they also didn't like the heat, and so they decided to dismiss him and wait until they can put their own guy in to head the FBI. And
are you offering your services? Are you available?
No. That's not a job I want or could do. It strikes me as the FBI, while I'm ethical, I'm situationally ethical, so there's that. But also, I suspect that the director of the FBI has to be pretty organized. He can't be going, so which is the, who is the guy? That would be me. I'd be giving a briefing. I go, so who is, and that would be bad.
I think you're giving yourself a compliment there, because you'd be more like, it's Wednesday, right?
Lauren Marks is in our studio, not to talk about that, but to talk about her own remarkable journey. Lauren, welcome to WGN. How are you this afternoon?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Your book is The Year a Brain Injury Changed My Language and Life. Actually, that's the subtitle. The title is A Stitch of Time. You had, called an aneurysm? Is that what led to your, what happened?
Well, an aneurysm ruptured in my brain when I was 27. So that was totally unexpected.
Like on the spot. You're at a bar, about to sing karaoke with some friends.
I was on stage singing the song out.
And boom, you just dropped.
And so, unfortunately for me, it was the sort of not the kind of song you want to be doing when you say it to be your song, so, like swan song. It was a total eclipse of the heart. I was in the middle of singing that song.
I actually wondered if that isn't why your brain said, nope, we're out. Total Eclipse of the Heart is not a song that should be sung in most bars anyway.
No.
So you have this incident where you, next thing you know, you're waking up, somebody slapping you in the face saying, hey, come to.
Mm-hmm.
Keep going.
Well, I mean, I was there for the Fringe Festival. I was touring. I was an actor, a director, and a PhD student in New York. But basically after I woke up, after some sort of gloaming moments, I'd had emergency brain surgery. I mean, it was over, and that's what people were telling me. So I just tried to adjust to whatever that meant, but it didn't quite seem correct. It didn't seem like that had really happened, because I had looked in the mirror and I didn't have a scar. I didn't quite understand how you'd have a brain surgery without, you know, going through the head. I later learned the details of a neuroradiological procedure. But more importantly, the thing that had changed the most was I had lost my language, speaking, reading, writing, and my inner language. I think the inner monologue was sort of the most pronounced element.
Can you describe that? Because you're doing the book so well. What do you mean, I've lost my inner language?
Well, I call
my
it
inner monologue.
Exactly. I call it the quiet in the book because, and I want to say it's important to emphasize that I didn't call it anything at the time because I didn't name things in this way. I just knew something was different. I didn't know what was different. And it seemed to me that that what it could have been was, it just took a long time. Basically, I had to get my language back to know that it had been missing.
Well, your outer language was lost, too. That is, you suffer a brain injury that now renders you sort of like an Oliver Sacks patient, unable to recognize words or language. You weren't able to speak well. And when you were speaking, you thought you'd be doing a great job.
Exactly.
And it evidently on the other end was gibberish. They didn't know what you were saying at all.
Yeah, I'm told I had about 40 or 50 words. But, you know, when people were looking at me perplexed, I was saying, this is really their problem, isn't it? You know?
Well, that said, you also had trouble reading their reactions. You sort of lost the ability to intuit people's facial expressions.
Yeah, there was like a blunt tool with that. Like I knew someone who was a friend from a foe. I knew someone who was helpful and someone who was not helpful. I knew who my mother was. I knew that my friends were my friends. It wasn't pure amnesia. But yeah, it was, everything was really dampened.
Well, at that time, after the injury and after the surgery, right?
Yeah.
If I had said to you, hello, how are you? And what did you think of Donald Trump today or something? Would you understand what I was saying?
It's so funny that you mentioned that specifically because I was an American in Scotland and they kept asking me about Gordon Brown and he'd just become the prime minister. So even if I wasn't super injured, I wouldn't have been able to answer what they were saying. They're like, who's the prime minister? And I was like, apparently I was just trying to say not Blair, but that wasn't coming out either. So it just, I would have known if someone said the president is in trouble and the president at the time, you know, I would have known who that was and I would be able to access it, but I'd need to have these prompts. I wasn't having that automatic recall that we all have in regular conversation.
So you were able to eventually recover that ability, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The inner monologue that you said you lost was, you said when you get up in the day and you say, okay, now I'm going to brush my teeth and make coffee or whatever, there's a sort of conversation we have with ourselves, a will to do it and kind of an inner monologue.
Yeah.
And that was lost on you. But would you still know to brush your teeth and make coffee in the morning?
Well, I was in the hospital for a while, so I didn't make the coffee. I think someone told me to brush my teeth. I was very, very present focused. And that's sort of the element that surprises people the most, that I wasn't upset. I mean, that's probably the most unusual aspect to the brain injury.
Yeah, you're like my teenage sons. They were only thinking in the moment.
Well, yeah. And I wonder how much of that was, you know, other parts of the brain injury, because it's a hemorrhage, so it can attach to any part of the brain can be attacked. But in that floodplain, basically. But I was absolutely content, because I didn't really have a lot of interest in my past and future. And I feel like that language might have been part of that, you know, that without having to say, what am I doing in a hospital? Am I in trouble? How long am I going to be here? Will I be able to get back to my PhD program? Will I be able to act again? None of that was running. So I had impressions. And when things happened that were unpleasant, I understood that to be unpleasant. But it just passed so quickly. It was as if it didn't happen at all.
This will seem insensitive, but was that kind of a nice place to be?
Yeah, I don't think it's insensitive at all.
Well, I mean, you suffered a brain injury, and this is a malfunction of your brain. But when you describe the quiet in capital letters as though it's a thing, a person, or a place, I think I kind of like the quiet.
I do, too. And so did I at the time. And that was the surprise. I mean, it was so, so utterly encompassing and so comfortable.
Can you tell us what it was like then when you're in the hospital and you have your first Diet Pepsi?
That's so funny. All my suite mates was in a suite of four, and I was one of those four. And all of them were Scottish, and all of them had very thick brogues. But one of them was willing to, you know, walk me down to where the Coke machine was. And I was just so enthralled, like in a way that you wouldn't really think a trip to the Pepsi machine was really that important. But I mean, every step was just sort of magical, every little moment. And when I, you know, had this like popped fizz, I mean, I didn't bring any money. I didn't know what I was supposed to do there. And she bought it for me. And then, and as soon as I had it in my mouth, it was just, it felt volcanically sweet. I just had never, it felt like I'd never had that impression before, ever. It was really, I mean, and that was sort of mirrored in by almost all of my daily activities, getting dressed, brushing my teeth, you know. I did love having my family there. I did love my friends, but I was kind of more comfortable when they weren't there.
Look at you. You sound and seem completely recovered from all of this. What was the lesson you learned, or what was the point of your telling this story?
Oh, that's a pretty big question. Why? I mean, I can tell you why I was working on it and why I was compelled to tell it. And that's changed now, why I wanted to put it out in the world. But I mean, I was producing these journal entries even when my language was very, very fractured. So I didn't know how bad it was. And at some point, I had this awareness. Like, I looked into my own journal entries thinking I had produced something in there that was not there. And that if anyone else looked into these journal entries, they wouldn't have been able to make sense of that.
It was sometimes a nonsensical jumble of words.
Absolutely.
To an outsider. Even
exactly.
To you, yeah.
But how funny to realize that later, to look in thinking you're going to find, like, oh, a journal that you understand and it chronicles your experiences, but looking to my own journal and say, this is gobbledygook, and I kind of know what this is referencing because I know what that one thing is, but no one else would. And so that was first terrifying, to tell you the truth, that moment in which I saw that it really had been very, very bad, because then I wondered, what does it mean now? Because at the time, I had my inner monologue restored at that point, and knowing the sort of magnitude of that situation was suddenly horrifying, because if I'm like that then, what was I now, and what will I be in the future? But the second right after, it was super curious, you know, like, well, that's weird and that's interesting. So then I just started feeling like this was a sort of worthy endeavor to sort of plumb that, my more than one mind. You know, that I woke up with a different brain, and myself became a moving target.
So do you like this version? Do you remember the old version of you? And do you like this newer version of you?
I think there are pros and cons to all of these versions. I have to say that the quiet is not as readily accessible as it was in those moments. It is something that I can reflect on in a purposeful way. I can sort of go into a meditative element.
But pardon me if I may, do you think you still like the same things? Do you still have the same affection for the boyfriend? Do you have the same relationship with your parents? Do you like Diet Pepsi more now than you used to? Are you the same person that you were?
Let's address the Diet Pepsi first. No, I didn't feel a lot of that stuff becomes more subdued, and other things become more enriched. I'm very grateful that my the people who were there for me, because I did not have the same emotional intention with them for a while, because for lots of reasons. So our language and our interactions become so much more enriched by that watching them watching me transform into something slightly different. Now, that being said, I'm not the same person who just woke up from the aneurysm either. So, I mean, in some ways, 10 years later, I think there's a lot of similarities to now as I was before. I just think I have a little more positivity than I had before the rupture. I think because, like, what are you supposed to do? Like, I think I had a lot of 27-year-olds, like, with some ambition. Like, I've got to get these things done. If it's not working, it's my fault. Why is it not working? And how can I change this? Maybe I can't change this. Maybe happiness is not the point, is something I thought to myself at some point, wrote down.
I think there's some insight into your book, too, that maybe you don't realize. Do you want to know what it is?
Tell me.
After this. On and off the air, we're talking with Lauren Marks. Her book is A Stitch of Time. The Year a Brain Injury Changed My Language and Life. If you are a fan of Oliver Sacks, imagine if all of his patients wrote really well, fascinating books. This is along those lines. She is going to be appearing this evening in Logan Square It's City Lit. Reading from the book tonight?
Yeah.
Are you're able to read from your book as well?
I can. Please come. Please come.
I only asked because off the air you were saying, well, there's some vestiges of having had an aneurysm, and mm-hmm. you're such a language-specific person, but the way you write and encompass words now or encounter words is different.
Yeah, absolutely.
See, there, I just did it. I said encompass instead of encounter. They're similarly sized words. I was describing to her how I have some weird word issues. And I wonder if maybe I shouldn't have a brain scan, too. Your thoughts.
Well, I call those circumlocutions,
yes.
You know.
I do spoonerisms, too.
Yeah, and I think a certain number of those things do just happen to everybody. But when it becomes a reliable pattern, and I mean, like, there's not a day that goes by. In fact, there's not an hour that goes by when I don't produce something in writing that is not correct. I mean, there's like three elements, perhaps. Like, I leave out pronouns or I replace them. If I'm writing about myself, I sometimes wrote he or she or even they. Like, that's not a that's
really
not a
literally
normal...
your fingers do that. And
yeah.
You had no intention of doing that.
And it's really common, actually. I've talked to many other people who have aphasia who say the same. The other is what I call phonemic paraphasias, which things that sound the same but don't mean the same thing at all, like soul and sore, cad and cat.
You'll
fly
write one
and
word,
die, even,
knowing,
you know, like,
right, and you're like, why did that word appear in front of me? I just wrote it, but I didn't intend to put that down at all.
Yeah, but the speed of writing is a little faster for me than for speaking. So, like, I can put down a full paragraph or two paragraphs, maybe an email, maybe some just free writing, but then I have to highlight the entire area. And a lot of computers are set up this way to have text-to-speech. So then listen to everything and see what I left out and what I'm wrong. Like, my editing brain is still able to get it. I still hear the misses and the misfires, but that doesn't stop me from producing them.
You're a lovely writer, and your story's compelling. I think one thing that maybe you can't appreciate, because you're only you, but as a third person reading what you wrote, I think your sort of description of and pursuit of the quiet, you know, your description of the quiet, you'll read about it in the book, I think is just really interesting. And the fact that we all have this inner monologue that I think we take for granted.
Mm-hmm.
And if we think about who we are and how we are addressing ourselves, we would benefit if we thought, instead of worrying about all the time what other people are saying to me, what am I saying to me,
mm-hmm.
would be really resourceful.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I miss that sort of placid quiet, as I talk about it in the book. But I also want to say, in praise of inner monologue, too, I mean, like, it is very successful to be able to talk to yourself. It's a very adult thing to do, to be able to plan. Like, language is at its very best for me when it's not right here and not right now. So you can be in a room with someone you love listening to opera, and you can have an amazing experience together, right? You don't need the words to say, wasn't that an amazing experience? That's present tense is good. You can do that with somebody else. But if you want to collaborate or make something in the future, like, you need the language. If you need to reflect on something that was impersonal or the person wasn't with you at that moment, whatever it is, you have to access it with language. And that's what the inner monologue can be so successful with. It's like, it can be incredibly pernicious as well. It can run you on the hamster wheel of despair if you let it.
Yeah,
yeah. But yeah, I think that it can be a great thing too.
Lauren Marks, A Stitch of Time is her book. It's a Simon & Schuster hardback. She's going to be out at Logan Square tonight at City Lit. Nice to meet you.
7 p.m. Come on out.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
It's 2:08 and it's raining on Michigan Avenue. Not that hard. Some people have umbrellas. Some people don't. Some windshield wipers are working. Some aren't.
Whatever.
Say the same about us. We're here until 3 o'clock. Then Ro Khan will come your way with Anna DeVlantis. I'll bet they'll talk about this. I'll bet they're going to talk about this James Comey thing. In fact, we're going to talk about that a little more in this hour. By the way, before we do, just thanks again to our guests just a moment ago. The book is called A Stitch of Time. Lauren Marks was in our studio. And it's just so interesting, and it gets a little sort of flowery, the conversation, but I hope you got a sense of what she and it are all about. And I was just intrigued by some of the things that are vestiges to her, but maybe are the same sorts of things you and I experience. I said, do you worry sometimes that you'll forget a word? Or you'll invert the letters and you'll think, oh, my God, that's the hemorrhage again. That's something from my brain injury. And she said, yeah. And then she started to describe some of the things that she experiences in life and in language. And I said, well, I have some of those things, too. And then she kind of smiled and laughed and said, well, we all do spoonerisms or we all sometimes mistake words. But, for instance, when I write, she said, I can type and my words go down on paper. Sometimes the wrong words appear magically, but generally that works. But then she can't work off the written words that she's put in front of herself. She then has to have it highlighted and somebody reads them back to her in order for her to do the correction. I said, okay, that's different. But do you sometimes do that where you have some sort of peccadillo about words or names and you think, oh, this is so strange, but this is the way my brain works. This is the way mine is wired. I'll often play 6 degrees of separation. I'm sure you do this too. If I'm trying to think of some actor or actress, I can see them as plain as day. I know the length of their first name and the length of their last name, but I don't know exactly what the letters are, but I kind of know where the vowels are placed. And so I'll sometimes describe the word to Brenda. God bless her. Or sometimes I will say, well, but this person was married to a person who was in that movie. But then I won't remember exactly the name of that movie that I'm referring to. So I go through this convoluted thing in order to try and get at the word or name. And as I do so, I judge the patience of or the interest in the people I'm explaining this to, because by now they've checked out and I don't blame them. Brenda generally is there for me. My son Griffin will go along for the ride and help me try and mine this thing I'm thinking of. And then when we get to it, it's such a minor reference point. You know, it becomes a task unto itself. I just want to come up with this thing. It's not really as important as I'm making this product or this procedure. There, I just said product instead of procedure. Steve, do you think I've had an aneurysm?
No, but I do that. Sometimes I worry I've had a little stroke because the words...
I know, yeah.
I'm serious.
I know. Well, I think...
The words don't come out quite the right way.
I know.
My mind doesn't keep up. My mouth doesn't keep up with my mind.
My sister's an attorney. She's smart as a whip. She's got great recall. And every now and then she'll say, I think sometimes I can't... I walk into a room and I don't know why I've walked in here. And I go, oh my God, it's happening. You know, it's the early onset of something. And I go, I think we all kind of do that, Mary. You're good. You're good to go. Don't worry about it. She writes about these sorts of things in her book, A Stitch of Time. It's 2:11. Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy is on a phone line. He's a congressman who actually, I think, used to listen to my radio show when I was on at WMBD in Peoria, Illinois. Raja, it's John Williams. You're on WGN. How are you this afternoon?
Hey, John. How are you doing? And yes, I did listen to you on WMBD in Peoria, Illinois, which is where I grew up.
So what were you doing there? Growing up, going to school? Did you go to Bradley University?
No, I actually grew up there. My father taught at Bradley University in engineering. He's been on the faculty for almost 40 years
wow.
now.
Wow. It's a great engineering school. Good for him. Good for you guys.
Then, absolutely. Absolutely. Go Braves.
Whereabouts did you live in Peoria then?
We lived in the Idlebrook neighborhood, which was down War Memorial Drive.
Yeah, we lived on Glenwood. Well, we lived in a bunch of places, but we live right across from campus over there.
In very good.
Call it the Uplands? I forget what the name of that neighborhood was.
But
I digress. So there you are, a Democratic member of Congress. What was your reaction to James Comey's dismissal?
We were outraged. I was outraged. I think that... this has not happened since the Saturday night massacre in October 1973 when the president basically fired Archibald Cox, a member of his administration, a special prosecutor who was investigating him for and Watergate. And this is what's happening right now with regard to Trump, President Trump, and Mr. Comey. Mr. Comey, as the FBI director, is leading an investigation into what exactly is going on with Russia's interference in our democracy. And he is very likely investigating members of the Trump administration or entities affiliated with the Trump administration. And just as he's getting, I guess, deeper into the investigation.
Subpoenas were supposed to go out today. Subpoenas were supposed to go out today. And then
exactly
he gets fired.
Right. And not only that, John, but you know, a couple of days ago, he asked for additional resources for the Russia investigation, and so I'm sure that folks within the administration knew about that request, knew what was coming down the pike, and unfortunately, this is what we saw last night—the Tuesday night massacre occurred.
You're a Democrat from the 8th, member of Congress. Did you have any inkling? Was there any buzz that Comey's head was on the chopping block?
No. You know, to be sure, Democrats were not terribly happy with what he did with regard to Hillary Clinton. But on the other hand, we know for sure that he has also been investigating this this particular connection between folks affiliated with the Trump administration and Russia for some time now. And he's about to testify before the Senate Intelligence Committee, and he gets fired. He's going to be – I hope he still testifies next week. I hope that they bring him before their body. In my own committee, we are the House Oversight Committee. We are investigating General Michael Flynn's ties to Russia. And Flynn is also at the center of a number of controversies swirling around the White House's ties to Russia. And what I've called for is we are going to press for subpoenas to be issued by the Oversight Committee to the White House to preserve all documents and gather all documents and evidence related to Michael Flynn. I just think that we have to do this in light of what happened last night with regard to Comey.
Isn't it possible that both narratives are true, that Comey should lose his job because of how much he was talking about the investigation, how much he was characterizing Hillary Clinton's actions, even though he said she didn't do anything criminal in our estimation? He then went further to say that it was inappropriate the way she behaved. The very fact that he released the letter in October, I mean, those are things that would give you pause and maybe say, I no longer have confidence in you. So those are maybe fireable offenses by the director of the FBI.
Well, I think what's for sure is that I think we should investigate the firing of Comey. I think we need to know why he was let go. That is, by the way, part of the duty of our oversight committee as well as oversight bodies within the Senate. You know, one of the things that your listeners probably already know, but the FBI director has a 10-year term,
right?
Which really means that he or she is somewhat insulated or should be somewhat insulated from political pressures of elections and different presidential administrations. In this particular case, what we know is that I believe no FBI director had been previously fired in this manner. Only one, to my knowledge, has been
Clinton,
fired in the
Bill Clinton
in the
fired
past
the
30
FBI
years.
Director, yeah.
Yeah, William Sessions, with regard to some issues regarding his own personal finances, when he refused to resign. But Sessions was not investigating Clinton at the time. This is a situation where it's clear that Mr. Comey is investigating the very administration that has ended up firing him.
Okay, but here's my question for you, because, right, that happens too. I mean, Kellyanne Conway almost said alternative facts on TV again yesterday, but she did say different set of facts. And one set of facts is the behavior I described, which maybe is actionable. The other set of facts is that he's looking into, he's investigating collusion between the Russians and the Trump administration before the election. And so for that reason, you should be hands off. And yet for another reason, maybe this guy has lost all of our confidence and he needs to be pulled right now. Or 18 days ago, but maybe you could make that case as well. So there's the Trump administration sitting on two things on either side of the scale. Is it your view that simply because they were investigating him, they should have taken a hands-off approach?
It's my view that generally in that situation, you just don't fire somebody like that without some process or, you know, consultation in the way of talking to the Senate Judiciary Committee or the House Judiciary Committee or others with oversight of the Department of Justice. Remember, it's not just Trump who's potentially being investigated, although I know that he mentioned in his letter that Comey said he was not, but, you know, we don't know exactly what the facts are. But we have Sessions, who's the head of the DOJ, who has recused himself from the Russia investigation completely. And so for this gentleman, Mr. Sessions, our attorney general, who's not supposed to be really doing anything with the Russia investigation.
Well, that's interesting.
To be torpedoing.
He shouldn't be weighing in on this at all.
No, no, he should not. And I think that there's just too much smoke here, John. I think, you know, we've got to investigate this. Now, you may have some valid points, but then let's get to the bottom of it. We need to investigate why Comey was fired, and I hope that they turn over the facts and documents related to that as well. In any case, what I do know for sure, since I've been viewing the classified documents related to Michael Flynn and his ties to Russia, which I'm sure that Comey was also investigating, is that, you know, we have got to get more documents and evidence from the White House in connection to Michael Flynn.
Wait a minute. You have been reviewing the documents and you have seen what's in these documents that you've seen about Michael Flynn?
Well, I can't get into the specifics.
Here's a question I have for you about that.
Yes. Yeah.
Stay right here. I didn't realize you'd looked at these documents. Oh, have I got questions for you, Raja? And you may choose not to answer them. Harry's got a question for you, too, on line one. And you may have a question as well. Rajna Krishnamoorthy's on a phone line, Democratic congressman from Schaumburg. It's 220. My number's 312-981-7200. This is WGN. Raja Krishnamoorthy, the Democrat from Schaumburg, member of Congress, on a phone line. And you can be, too. The number's 312-981-7200. I still think the big question today is, because it's open to speculation, why do you think FBI Director Comey was fired? Why do you think President Trump fired the director of the FBI? Is it for the one reason or is it for the other reason? Rajna Krishnamoorthy's on a phone line. So let's take some questions from a couple of listeners, if you don't mind, Congressman.
Sure.
I'll just take five more minutes of your time here. And we'll start with Harry, who's been holding for a while. Harry, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi.
Yeah, I just can't seem to understand why there is any discussion as to the reasons why he was terminated. Have either of you read the letter that was put together by Rosenstein, his immediate superior?
Yeah.
And the investigation that he conducted over the last 2 weeks,
mm-hmm.
and the conclusions which he drew. He in turn forwarded that on to his boss, DOJ, Jeff Sessions, and they collectively made a recommendation that Comey could no longer lead the FBI. What is so gray about that for Democrats?
Raja, what do you want to say to that?
I think that we're so wrapped up, and I've been a Democrat a long time until this last election, and I'm very disappointed in our elected officials. They're wallowing in the mud, and they're creating the mud where it doesn't exist. I don't know how many more times it needs to be said that there is no collusion and there hasn't been any collusion.
How do you know that? How do you know that?
That story's over.
How do you know that?
That story's over.
Harry, how do you know
Because you've had the CIA director and the FBI director, both people said in public that that was the case. There is no evidence.
Harry, hold on. There's somebody in the know is on the phone. Raja, what's your response to that?
Well, first of all, I think that with regard to the Deputy Attorney General's memo, certainly that has to be taken into consideration, except that there's so much in the way of evidence about an ongoing investigation going on with regard to the Trump administration and affiliated entities that, you know, it's the job of Congress and the American public to further scrutinize exactly what the heck's going on.
The FBI director serves at the pleasure of the president, not the oversight committee of Congress. Okay.
Well, actually, the oversight committee of Congress, along with Congress, must investigate exactly why this gentleman was fired at this time. You know, especially
read the letter, Congressman. Read the letter.
That's their narrative, and they're entitled to it.
Did you vote for Rosenstein, Congressman? Did you vote for him, or you're a senator? I'm not sure. I didn't catch your title.
Congressman.
Did you vote for him?
You can call me Raja. That's fine.
Did you vote for him?
Vote for Mr. Rosenstein. He's not an elected official. He's an appointed official. But the point is, sir, that let me finish, please. At this point in time, look, the American public needs to get answers to some basic questions. Why was Jim Comey fired?
We already
Mr.
have him.
Rosenstein,
Harry, stop it for a second. Just let the man talk. Go ahead, Raja.
Thanks, John. You know, there's obviously one narrative which the Trump administration has offered. A lot of people have a lot of questions about that narrative, and so Congress is rightfully asking questions about it. From my vantage point, all I know is that the Oversight Committee on which I sit has asked for numerous documents and evidence connected to General Michael Flynn and his ties to Russia. And those documents and evidence have not been forthcoming in the least. The classified information I've reviewed has only raised more questions than answers, and it just, you know, all the more points to the need for an independent commission, something to just take this out of politics and have some independently minded folks.
Well, I don't know how you do that. I've been wondering about that. How do you find an independent commission? Because somebody has to appoint those people. If Democrats appoint them, if Republicans appoint them, I don't know how. I guess you get equal numbers of appointees from each party.
Yeah, we did this with regard to the 9/11 commission. I think that the work of that commission was excellent, and it involved, you know, eminent people from both parties being appointed by Congress and the president. And I think that that's exactly what we need right now. We need to put country over party right now.
Hold on a second, Congressman. I want to get in two more calls. And Steve, you had a question too in the newsroom.
I don't want to get into calls, but Congressman Michael Anderson, the agent in charge here in Chicago, is among the four people who the Justice Department says is, I guess, under early consideration. And I just wonder what you know of Michael Anderson and if you think he can conduct this investigation you're talking about independently.
I don't know, Mr. Anderson. What I do know is, regardless of who the next director nominee is, that person needs to be vetted and scrutinized very carefully by the United States Senate, since it is a confirmable position. And, you know, that person needs to restore some integrity and trust at the very top of the FBI right now.
Should that person automatically recuse themselves from the investigation since they would be now the new appointee under these circumstances?
I don't know, John. I don't know the circumstances of this current firing. And that's why, as I said before, we need to get to the bottom of that as well. Unfortunately, the more these types of actions happen, the more investigations they spawn and the more calls for investigations. Just as an aside, I was not hired to probe ties between the White House and Russia. I was hired on a platform to grow and strengthen the middle class and focus on economic issues, which I've been pushing in Congress. But, you know, given what we're seeing with regard to the ties between the administration and Russia, it's my duty on the Oversight Committee to press as hard as possible to get to the bottom of this, get it over with, and move on.
Vic on line two says, can't anyone see this misdirection? It's typical from the Trump playbook. He does this, so then we don't focus on maybe the failings of the health care bill or the tax bill, or at least they're able to use this as a misdirection while they hammer that out. Maybe. Ann says on line three, can Trump change the Constitution to make it a dictatorship? Ann really is. Ann, you're not asking that question, are you?
Well, yeah. I just want to know, is our Constitution strong enough to stop somebody from coming in and trying to change it into a dictatorship? I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah. Actually, your question is more serious than I was making it sound. Do you have confidence in the Constitution to handle somebody who is as power hungry as Donald Trump is, Raja?
Document in the United States and the world. That's what really is the bedrock of our democracy. I'm confident that we will it will be able to weather any crisis that Donald Trump or anyone else brings upon us. However, right now Congress and the leaders of Congress need to step up to the plate and provide the oversight necessary to make sure that Donald Trump does not, or anybody else, overstep our constitutional boundaries. What I'm hoping is that, as I said before, we take this investigation, these series of investigations, out of politics, put them into a 9/11 independent commission, and then proceed from there.
Raja Krishnamoorthy, Democratic Congressman from Schaumburg, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, sir.
2:39 on WGN. This is Sean Williams. Nobody's pausing to consider this also. Maybe there wouldn't be this uproar if they had simply handled it differently. If they had brought Comey in, talked to him, given him a chance to say it's a pleasure to serve this country, you know, done it more the way it's done. But the guy's doing a briefing in California, and on CNN there's a scroll, and that's how the FBI finds out, including James Comey. That's how members of Congress found out. That's how people doing the investigation into the FBI found out. That's how, or Ned, the FBI found out that we're investigating the Trump administration. That's how I think Sean Spicer found out. If they had just sort of managed the dismissal better. I just Googled people who found out publicly that they were fired. I think that's part of the problem here. If they had almost brought Comey into the firing, maybe it would have gone a little bit better. I mean, I think it would have gone a lot better, because I don't know that you or I had a great opinion about James Comey beforehand. He gave that testimony a couple of weeks ago. It seemed to be heartfelt. You may have agreed or disagreed, but he famously said that if he had to do it over again, he would still do what he did. He said he doesn't pick sides. He does what he thinks is just. That all sounded pretty good. Maybe he's been a little too chatty. But I don't know if he's a good director or a bad director. I don't talk about that with my friends at the game. Hey, what do you think of Comey? You think he's doing a good job? People don't have that conversation. So if you just sort of let him be part of his own dismissal, and maybe he wouldn't have cooperated, but if you had just gotten everybody in line from the White House through the FBI sort of in a row, if they'd handled it differently, then there wouldn't be this uproar. Because half of the narrative today, besides are they doing it just because they're afraid that he's leading the investigation and this is a Saturday night massacre sort of thing, a big part of this story is the way it's been handled. And that's not so consequential. It's just kind of interesting, but it doesn't help. I mean, think about how this story would have gone if they had said, we've reviewed, you know, maybe wait a little bit longer. Because I'm not sure how thorough the investigation is you can do in as brief a period of time as these people did. But I don't think there looks like there's anything new that they uncovered in their quote-unquote investigation of what a job James Comey was doing. They simply said that, having reviewed what's happened so far, Mr. President, we think it's time for you to dismiss him. And then Donald Trump said, okay. That might be the tail wagging the dog. The president may have said, quick, give me a two-page letter that summarizes why I should fire him, but we're going to fire him. Now go get me that evidence, and then they did it. That happens. I think that's how we ended up looking for weapons of mass destruction, to be honest with you. So that may be what happened. But if they had found a way to take a little more time and to sort of bring him into the process, not have him in this embarrassing situation in California, I wonder if people would be talking about it differently today. I'll bet they would. I'll bet they would, because that whole thing then is off the plate. It looks less, what's the word, Steve, where you just suddenly do something?
Rash?
It looks less rash. That's not the word I was thinking of, but I've been having trouble thinking of words. But rash works.
Maybe it's that stroke.
That I'm working on having?
Well, if you take them at their word for the timeline, and you and I were talking about this off the air, so talk me out of it, but if you take them at their word that Comey was fired yesterday as a result of an investigation by the Deputy Attorney General, right?
Yeah.
The Deputy Attorney General took his job 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're saying is that something as monumental as firing an FBI director was done after a less than two-week-old investigation. Now, I know a lot of the stuff was public knowledge, and, you know, he certainly made his mistakes, and we knew about a lot of them. But I'm assuming that if you're going to make a personnel change, you know, you're investigating a little deeper than CNN's crawl.
Well, you read the letter. I've got it here. I've highlighted it. I'm not going to read it all. But, like, here's one of the points of why Comey was fired. Concerning his letter to the Congress on October 28th, 2016, right? This is the letter that he wrote saying, oh, wow, well, there's more email coming and we're going to have to do a further investigation. That's October 28th, 2016, a week before the election. Concerning that letter, the director cast his decision as a choice between whether he would speak about the FBI's decision to investigate the newly discovered email messages or conceal it. Conceal is a loaded term that misstates the issue. When federal agents and prosecutors quietly open a criminal investigation, we are not concealing anything. We are simply following the long-standing policy that we refrain from publicizing non-public information. In that context, silence is not concealment. So it would not have been wrong, this letter argues, for him to stay quiet about it. Ironically, they were championing it at the time. My point is that this little
fact... I think the president said it took great bravery, right?
He did. Courage, yeah. I believe, was the word. And so my point, though, Steve, is that this little factoid here, one of the reasons for which he was fired, he shouldn't even be talking along these lines, is not a new... You didn't need an investigation to come up with that paragraph.
Okay, but if I'm going to be fired for saying something to someone else, I would hope my boss would come to me and say, or to others involved in it, you know, and to look into a little more deeply than you would be just by reading clippings. That's kind of what I'm saying.
Yeah, right.
But the point is, I think the report, you know, paved the way for the fire. I think the report was written to justify the firing.
Totally. That Donald Trump said, well, I want to get rid of Comey. I'm tired of his nauseous feeling or whatever he's having. Let's get him out of there. You guys come up with a report.
And the reason, and he's done a lot of things that, you know, you could argue were done badly on either side of the issue.
Right.
But there should be, and I think the president's finding, a very high hurdle for firing someone who's investigating you.
Yeah.
Or your people. And that's where this is. It's not that Comey didn't do things that were done questionably. It's that in addition to all of that, the guy's investigating the firer.
Well, does that make him then so insulated that you can't touch him?
I think it raises the bar a lot.
It's a lot higher to let him
go.
And they needed better reasons than the ones you're seeing in this 2.5-page letter.
Well, that's for others to decide. But I just think the bar,
it's pretty high. By
definition, should be pretty high if you're firing a guy who told Congress 10 days ago is looking into your administration.
Totally understand that, Stephen. It just begs then for a special prosecutor. How do they not see that? I think that's the last thing they want. This thing's going to drag on for years. And a special prosecutor might be worse than the one they had in James Comey. I mean, how do they not see that? He said. Not rhetorically.
Special prosecutors rarely end up well.
Ask the Clintons. Ask any of them. I mean, they didn't go looking for Monica Lewinsky, but special prosecutors, Ken Starr, right, found Monica Lewinsky.
Exactly.
Philip, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi, Philip. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. There's so much speculation here. And Steve Bertram, with your comment about, you know, firing somebody that was investigating you, and Comey was not. There were five layers below him. This investigation is continuing and ongoing.
Wait a minute, but it is an FBI investigation, right?
That's correct.
And he is the head of the FBI, right?
No one person is in charge of that.
I understand that, and you understand that. I know that. Comey's not sitting there working the phones.
Let's not simplify it in such a manner that the majority of the American people believe that he fired him because he was being investigated.
Okay, that's the question I started the show with. Why do you think? Answer Philip's question here, 312-981-7200. Why do you think he was fired then? Why do you think he was fired, Philip?
I'll tell you why. You read that letter.
Yep.
There are some very credible sources that weighed in on this, including Eric Holder.
Mm-hmm.
Including Eric Holder. When does a society accept, okay, what their superiors, the people that have been elected, appointed, whatever you want, and approved by Congress? This Rothstein's record is impeccable, 96-4. And we're questioning this guy's integrity, that the president probably went to him and said, I want to get rid of Comey. Let's just kind of put together something and make it happen. That doesn't happen. That might have happened for the past 8 years.
Okay, that all makes sense. That all makes sense because the guy was what? He got 94 votes, which is great.
Yeah.
But so let's take that. Credible, but
the DOJs that weighed in on this.
Hold on, Philip. I get your point. I want to hear what Steve has to say.
No, and I'm with you on that too. But then you also have to consider that the president of the United States entrusted the decision to fire the director of FBI to a guy who's only been on the job 2 weeks. That doesn't seem very logical.
I don't believe that's the case, because he in turn reports to Jeff Sessions. But and the, all of that had been researched.
Hold on a second.
But the deputy, but they're saying that Comey didn't.
Hold on a second. Hold on 1 second.
What they're saying, though, is that it came from the report from the DAG, the Deputy Attorney General. That's what everyone in the administration is telling us happened.
Right. He's got 30 years of justice experience.
And he's been looking at this for 2 weeks, and you think that was a thorough...
Been looking at it since it occurred.
Yeah, I'm not so bothered by the timeline as you are, Steve, along the amount of time that it took to put this report together, since I don't think there's anything extraordinary in this letter. Maybe there's more reporting behind it.
Pretty devastating to Steve Comey's career. I really think so.
Thank you for the phone call. Okay, we'll pick up our phone lines in a minute. It's 250. The number is 312-981-7200. We got a minute for a call or two. We'll start with line one, and that's John. Jump in here. John, what did you want to say?
Yeah, I just want to talk about in Trump's letter, he makes a comment that Comey told him 3 times that he was not under investigation. And I think that's an outright lie on his point, because in any investigation, until it's concluded, no one's ever told that they're not a part of an investigation. So he talks about alternate facts all the time, and I think that's a big one right there that people are overlooking.
John, thanks for the phone call. I'm going to go from you to Nancy. You're on WGN. What did you want to say, Nancy? Hi.
Hi. Basically, you know, it gets to where the straw that broke the camel's back. I think he may have fired the wrong person.
Who should he fire?
And... No. I mean, I think this man is not going to take this sitting down. And I think what's going to happen is they're going to find out that there's a lot more that's going to take place now that he's done that.
That's an interesting point, Nancy. Thank you for the call. I think Mike on line 3 is kind of on the same trail, or on line 4. Mike, what did you want to say? You're on the air.
Yeah, I think he was fired because I think Comey was getting too close to what the truth is, and Trump didn't want to hear it.
That's Mike on line 4 and on line 5. Jennifer, what did you want to say? You're on the air.
Of course he was fired because he got too close to Trump. There was nothing new in that letter from Rosenstein. It was all stuff Trump had praised this guy for 6 months ago.
Yeah, there was not anything. There was no bombshell that I can read in that letter. Jennifer, thanks for the call. Rose is in the studio in a minute. All right, we're a few seconds away from 3 o'clock. You'll hear the beep, and then it'll be time for the news. Normally, Ro and Anna have strolled in here by now. Just kind of give them about 10 more seconds. 9, 7, 6. I hear them on the outside. Time's up.